Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
In a world of rising interest rates, China cuts. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. For the second time this year, the People's Bank of China today cut its benchmark interest rate by 0.1 percentage point to 2.75%. It was a surprise move that came after a range of data from retail sales to factory production showed the economy grew more slowly than expected in July. The Chinese government is still enforcing a strict so-called zero COVID strategy aimed at eliminating the virus, and as a result, cities across the country continue to comply with lockdown measures. The BBC's Joao De Silva has more.
The surprise cut suggests the country's economic recovery is on shaky ground. The latest data from the National Bureau of Statistics shows industrial output, a key measure of factory activity, grew only 3.8% in July from a year earlier. That's lower than the expansion recorded in the previous quarter. But China's economy is also facing other headwinds. From manufacturing centers to tourist hubs, Chinese cities continue to face strict pandemic lockdowns. There's also a deepening crisis in the property sector, traditionally a key engine of growth for the Chinese economy.
That's Joao De Silva reporting there. Checking the numbers, the Shanghai Composite Index ended today's session slightly in the red. Hong Kong's Hang Seng closed down 0.6%. Tech was the biggest drag after five U.S.-listed companies under scrutiny by the SEC said they will delist from the NYSE. European benchmarks are little changed meanwhile. And in Russia, bond markets are partly reopening after a six-month suspension, but only investors from, quote, non-hostile countries are allowed to trade. To the Korean Peninsula now, where both the North and South are marking Liberation Day, celebrating 70 years of independence from Japanese rule. Economics and geopolitics this year, though, are front and center. That's because Russian state media report President Vladimir Putin has sent a message to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, calling for closer ties, while South Korea's President Yoon Suk-yeol has promised large-scale aid to the country's northern neighbor if it stops developing nuclear weapons. The BBC's David Kan explains whether there's significance to these two events coming on the same day.
Well, I guess the date itself is quite likely coincidence, but from a South Korean perspective, it's a liberation day today. So it's always a day when the president would be actually, you know, giving a speech. However, having said that, you know, the plan, the audacious plan is the word that he uses. Like, he's been saying that since the beginning of his presidency. So it's not the first time he's mentioned it. It has been in the news consistently.
And this is the second time that we've seen South Korea's president try to use the allure of economic help to get his country's northern neighbor on side. Here's what he promised in return for denuclearization today.
We will implement a large-scale food program, provide assistance for power generation, transmission, and infrastructure for distribution, and carry out projects to modernize ports and airports for international trade. We will also help enhance North Korea's agricultural productivity, offer assistance to modernize hospitals and medical infrastructure, and implement international investment and financial support initiatives.
So, David, how is North Korea likely to respond to this second round of trying, I suppose, from South Korea?
Three presidencies ago, there was one, but North Korea didn't really like that, actually. Like, even this time, they've actually mentioned that it's the repeat of the same thing because it didn't really work out at the time. Because basically, the condition of it is that North Korea to denuke first. So most of the experts are actually saying, you know, this is really nothing more than just gestures, you know, because like we interviewed a few experts a couple of weeks ago and they all said, you know, that North Korea is already set in its plan and its path and they're not going to stop just because of this, because they believe, well, the experts believe that they have more to gain by completing like nuclear weapons and ICBMs rather than this, rather than what Korea is willing to give.
So just to explain to our listeners, what is the state of the North Korean economy at the moment?
It's more or less non-existent, I guess, because you know, when you think of like economy, right, like you're thinking of like an actual market, you know, like especially in the West, you're thinking of a little bit of a free market going on, you know, but actually, in fact, like there is a free market, but it's just all in the black market. You know, they call it Jangmadang, which is a market which is technically legal in North Korea, but like it's just kind of like left to exist. So there's no such thing as, you know, what we would consider, you know, central bank, you know, things like that, where like, you know, people try to, where the government tries to regulate the economy, but it just doesn't exist. It's basically individual, every, more or less every man for himself, you know, farmers selling their wares in a barter system to each other. Basically, the economy is so bad that it is more or less at like a non-existent level. Does that make sense?
The BBC's David Kan. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
A year after it seized power in Afghanistan, the Taliban has declared today a national holiday. White and black flags fly in the main square of the capital. Pickup trucks are full of fighters patrolling streets. Religious chants play from loudspeakers, and reports say the Taliban has forced some shops to close to ensure shopkeepers observe the holiday. The anniversary comes amid a deepening economic and humanitarian crisis in which many men can't find work, and women and girls are still excluded from work and formal education. The BBC's Yukita Lamai reports now from Kabul.
In March, there was excitement because the group had said teenage girls could learn again. But it was short-lived. Within an hour, the Taliban backtracked on their promise. I asked the group's main spokesman when schools would open.
Primary schools and universities are open for girls. In some provinces, secondary school students from grade 6 to 12 can go to school. But we have problems in other places. We are trying our best to solve them and to bring things back to normal.
What problems, though, because classes were always segregated for boys and girls even before the 15th of August. So what problem is there in opening the schools?
Our religious scholars have issues with the safety of girls traveling to and from schools. We also have to consider villages and districts where people don't want girls to go to school.
Zabihullah Mujahid said religious leaders in some areas have strong reservations about the issue and that his government is trying to build a consensus.
Education in our country is decided by the people and a body of religious scholars. The government is trying to avoid any sort of disagreement with them in order to maintain unity.
Many ultra-conservative clerics and their followers are part of the Taliban's support base, and the group fears losing its hold on power if it makes any move that goes against their beliefs. Girls in Afghanistan have already lost a year of secondary education.
We know that they have lost time and that is a problem. But on the other hand, the consensus of the people is also important.
But how will they trust you? Because in March you said the schools were going to be open. Girls went to school and were sent back home.
The people of Afghanistan trust us now. We are working to find a solution. Just as girls up to grade 6 and those in universities are able to attend classes, the others will also be able to.
Under the Taliban, women are disappearing from public life. The UN says that's further hurting an economy which is already in crisis. And it's a firm roadblock to the group's bid for international recognition.
That's the BBC's Yogita Lamai reporting from Kabul there. Be sure to tune in tomorrow. We're digging deeper into Afghanistan's perilous economic situation a year since the Taliban takeover. For now in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.